Falcons conversation coming up in 15 minutes with our buddy Joe Patrick to recap everything from Friday and preview what's going on next 2 days, almost the next 5 days, because we have the two scrimmages coming up Tuesday, Wednesday, and then the game is on Friday night right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll talk about the other team currently playing here in the A. That is, of course, our five stripes. And let's welcome in on the WadeFord.com hotline, Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. Follow him at Longshoe. About time, Jason, that the five stripes played some competitive, or even in one case, more than competitive soccer. What happened in their 4-1 win versus Atlas to close out Leagues Cup? And then they get a draw in Toronto, but they were able to save it late with Moranchuk bringing one home.
Yeah, it's funny. I think if you look at the two games, you created more chances in the game that you tied than the one that you won. But the difference in the Wednesday game finishing things off in Leagues Cup against Atlas was you converted on your chances and you started doing that early. And it's really one of the only first halves this season where you have taken advantage of the control that you've had in the match. You get up on a couple goals on just about any team, you're going to be able to play more freely. And what we've seen so often this season is what we saw Saturday night, where you're looking dangerous, you're creating opportunities, you're getting into good positions, you're getting shots off, you're forcing saves, and then you have that drop in, if it's energy level, if it's just a little blip in confidence, the other team starts to get going a little bit, and you concede a goal that you shouldn't concede, and then you're running uphill the rest of the game. I really feel like the team played as well on Saturday night as we've seen this season. And I think a lot of the key numbers back that up. You created eight big chances. You almost doubled up their shots. You tripled their expected goals. You had twice as many key passes. I mean, you were doing everything right on Saturday, but scoring. On Wednesday against Atlas, you scored goals and you scored them early, and the game had a different flow to it. If there's anything that you could change about Atlanta United in 2025 and going into 2026 is first half goals. I think first half goals have been one of the biggest issues that this team has had this season, where they've played well and they haven't scored, and then the game turns against them.
I think this is a good question to ask again. I know I asked this to you probably was back a couple of months ago now, but was anything from these last two matches that you saw something that they can use as a repeatable formula down the stretch?
I think they've found the way that they want to play. And that's maybe the most important thing when you get into this. Ronnie Dyla really tried to find something that would work. I think for people who've been paying attention and have watched how he's made tweaks all season long, you know, he wants this team to play in a 4-3-3. He wants them to be a team that presses high up the field and makes it difficult for the other team to play in their own half. He wants this team to get vertical, not recklessly. You know, he wants possession, but he wants to get up the field. He wants to get north-south. And for a while, this team struggled to do that. And they, you know, either he wasn't getting his ideas across, or players weren't believing in it, or guys weren't clicking, guys weren't, you know, feeling confident. I mean, I think probably a little bit of all of the above. And he had what he told me is, you know, he had to compromise kind of the way that he wanted to play to try to suit what could get some results. And, you know, he went to three center backs. He tried to be a little bit more of a counter-attacking team. It's not the soccer he believes in. It's not the soccer that this team was built to play. I think it didn't really work. And, you know, he kind of came to a conclusion of, I'm going to go down with my style being what we do. And I think one of the things about soccer that is maybe hard to grasp at times from the outside, like, your style of play is really important, and it kind of defines who you are. It defines the team you're going to build. It defines, you know, your identity as a team. And you can't control wins and losses. You wish you could. I mean, every coach probably wishes that they could, but you can't. You can control the way you play, though. And in turn, you can control the way that if you lose, you lose. But if you lose your way, you can live with that. and you can find ways to make that better. And I think, you know, probably 6-8 games ago, it's really gotten to where we're seeing the soccer that Ronnie Dyla believes in. We're seeing things that are repeatable. We're seeing things in terms of Bartosz Szlich bossing the midfield and being a really dangerous defensive midfielder, which has freed up Alexei Maranchuk and freed up, at times, Tristan Mbyambaa. It was Will Riley in the second half in Montreal, who I thought had a really good performance. But the other element that is very repeatable and we're seeing have a huge impact on this team is, since Ronald Hernandez came into the team at right back, for whatever reason, it's grounded Miguel Almiron in the right way. I think Miguel maybe at times was trying to do too much to carry this team, trying to have too much of an impact in the attacking third. And by trying to do too much, he wasn't doing much at all. He wasn't producing much. And now with Ronald behind him as the right back, Miguel's in front of him as the right winger. Those two are good friends off the field. I think Miguel stays wider, looks for combinations with Ronald, which brings the right back into the attack. It also creates more space for Alexei Maranchuk. And that trio has started to make this team's engine tick over a little bit faster, and it started to open things up. I think the important things that we've seen this summer is Ronnie Dyla's soccer works. It is something that he's won championships with. He's won 3 league titles in 3 different countries. It's really hard to do. He believes in it, and he has to stay true to it. And 2, you have to find these societies on the field. It's kind of the way that I've always called it, like little societies where you find, in that case, it's 3 guys, Ronald, Miggy, and Alexi, who can get on the same wavelength, have their space to operate in, but be close enough to where they can play with one another as well and combine and bounce off of each other. And that's created a template for this team to be more dangerous in the attack, to create more chances. You got to score more goals. That's something that, you know, you need to have continue to tick over. But this team is starting to find, I think, a platform that they can build around for the rest of this season, and probably more importantly at this point, for 2026.
So based off of what you just said, we do know that the personnel has, even if it's, I don't know, maybe you can call it drastically, since the beginning of the season with all the moves at the transfer window, was the roster that was assembled in the offseason just not the right fit for that style of coaching that you're explaining about with Ronnie Dyla, or was it something else?
No, that's funny. That's a good question. I don't think that's the case. I don't think the roster that was assembled, like the additions in the offseason coming into this year, I don't think that was the issue. Maybe you could have had more radical turnover in the offseason and changed a few things. And that's kind of step 2 of this process. Honestly, you know, we've seen an AME High come into the team as a center back. He's different than Derek Williams, than Steon Gregerson, than Noah Cobb and Efrain Morales, where he's a different profile. Juan Bettercall, who we saw in the second half in Montreal, is a different complement. I think he's a better player on the ball than anybody else in this club at center back, in terms of his passing, his work off on the ball, in terms of building the attacks. I think also he showed he's a little more physical than I was expecting, body in Prince Owusu in that Montreal game. And then we saw Steven Alzate make his debut. Steven's nowhere near fitness right now where you'd like him to be. That's why he only played about 10 minutes or so. But you see his quality, and I think you see his personality. So I think you had a very good team that hasn't performed the way that they should. And now maybe Dyla is able to point out a little bit more clearly to the front office of, hey, I need this kind of specific profile. I need a center back who can play out of the back. I need a center back who is that defend at all costs, gritty kind of guy. And I need a central midfielder in Alzate, who he knows, he's coached before. I need a guy like that, you know, strikes some fear in the opponent. And you get that, and you get that right side going like we've talked about, and you get Saba Lobjanica going as well. And that game against Atlas was a big part of that. He played well again, and his confidence is through the roof at the moment. You're starting to get some things going that are repeatable and pushes this team forward in the right way. But I want to see how that spine, the 2 new center backs and Alzate, over these next 9 games or so, I want to see how that looks and then how that feels as you're going into 26.
All right, coming up this weekend, we got Colorado at their place. They're middling. They're eighth in the table in the West, but they have a -7 goal differential, Jason. Is that something United can take advantage of?
Yeah, it is. They went on the road to Minnesota and won over the weekend. 20-year-old Darren Yappe scored twice. He's a talented attacker. But this is also a Colorado team that just sold their best attacker in Georgi Mihailovic, one of the best chance creators and goal scorers in the league. You know, he's a double-digit 10-10 kind of guy, goals and assists pretty consistently. They sold him for a big transfer. They're not going to get somebody in between now and Saturday. So their attack is not quite as dangerous. But you do have the challenges that you always have going into Colorado. You know, it is at altitude. It is a long trip. These are things that will be difficult. And I think the altitude comes into play a little bit for a team in Atlanta that, you know, those three guys that I talked about with Mihai, with Better Call, and with Alzate, they're all still building their fitness. You know, these are all guys who came in off of an off season from Europe where they're not in midseason form. They're not in late season form. So Mihai, maybe getting close to 60 minutes fit, maybe. Better Call, hopefully can be closer to 45 for Saturday. Alzate, I'm not sure if he can get up to 45. He'd be a second half sub, I would assume. So it is going to be still a little piecemeal with that side of it. You don't know if we get Pedro Amador back for this one either on the left side. Brooks Lennon has been playing there. So it's not going to be easy. Colorado is a gettable team on the road, but we'll go back to the beginning. You've got to get goals in the first half when you're playing well. You've got to produce. We saw it against Atlas, and we saw what happens if you don't get that against Montreal, where then you got to fight from behind.
Jason, appreciate it as always. When can we hear you this week?
Tomorrow night, we'll have Atlanta Soccer tonight. We'll have audio from players from Atlanta United after media tomorrow. I believe Latte Lot is speaking after the training session, so we'll have that for you on the station after your show is done, and then I'll be back on Thursday for the Intersection with Noel White.
All right, we'll be listening, and we'll chat next week. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Chris.
All right, that is Jason Longshore there. Yeah, maybe they're finding something now, an identity that Warren's shaking. Warren's like, oh, maybe. Maybe they're finding. Can I get a little positivity here? I got to deal with the Braves every single night here. I'm trying to.
That's why there's no positivity, Chris.
I got Kareem calling me and telling me, Turtle, we love the Braves. And, you know, you got to stop. I'm like, Kareem, I love you, bro, but they're awful. I know they just took 4 out of 5 from Miami, but they're awful. They had the third best odds to win the World Series, and they're not making the playoffs by a lot. Come on, man. We got to be fair. We can't coddle these boys. They got to be better. All right, when we get back, speaking of better, the Atlanta Falcons should be better. 10 games better? 10 wins better? We'll see. That's the question that's up at CTT Tonight, 929, also at C. Thomas Radio. Those are the Twitter pages for me. And for the show page, when we get back, Joe Patrick stops by, what happened this weekend, and we'll preview the Titans scrimmages coming up tomorrow and Wednesday. That is all on the way. Chris Thomas Tonight, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and on the Odyssey app. And this time, the mood of this song matches the mood, or at least it should, at Flowery Branch after what I thought was a very successful, albeit cut short for the near tragedy, thankfully, that was not for Mo Norris in week one of the preseason. And we'll break that all down with our Falcons insider. You hear him every Monday and Friday with me on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Joe Patrick on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock. Joe, obviously we put a bow on the Mo Norris situation after a scary scene at Mercedes-Benz on Friday, but just a final commending for all the staff and the trainers and the fans and the players and coaches. Everybody seemingly knew and got the message and understood the severity of the moment and came together and created one of the more unique and historic scenes that we'll remember for a long, long time.
Really, really unique. And, you know, just one of those reminders
I have kind of a controversial take. I don't know if you would want to hear it about.
Please.
Well, I think, you know, what happened is obviously, you know, thank God that was, you know, not as serious or not as bad as it could have been. And sometimes football does this, you know, sometimes there's just things that happen in football because of the nature of the game that is scary for people's physical health, you know, the players who are out there playing it. And I think that, I guess the controversial thing I was going to say is that, and I think that there's an element of this in combat sports as well, whether that's MMA or boxing, which is that it's one of those sports that's just so violent just because of the way it's played, the nature of the game, that, you know, you just have an ultimate respect for the people, the players in the arena, because people should understand that those types of things are things that can happen. And I guess the controversial point about this is I think there's something about that inherent danger to the game that draws us into it, that makes us want to watch even more, and all the more reason for me to have respect for those guys who go out there and put their bodies, you know, on the line for our enjoyment. And they do it because they enjoy it too. And they can, you know, provide for their families and whatnot. But I'm glad to see that it was all taken care of appropriately. There were more players talking about it today, just a little bit, just giving their appreciation to the medical staff as well that was there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and able to get Mo Norris treated into a hospital. And thankfully, great to see him back with his team in Detroit.
Joe, not only do I not think it's controversial, I think it's factual. I think the NFL is modern gladiator sport. And yeah, in the same way that the Roman Coliseum was filled to the brim and to its capacity, NFL stadiums, Sunday in and Sunday out, are doing the exact same thing. We it's human nature for whatever reason. It's programmed into our DNA to love watching the biggest and strongest and fastest of us compete in the most physically demanding way. And it was the same way back then, and it's the same as it is right now. So I don't think that's a hot take at all. And,
okay. I don't want to sound insensitive about it, but I know for me, I've recently kind of become, like, gotten into boxing and MMA, and I have to say that it's one of the reasons why is because it's almost prime in that sense where, you know, and that is a little different. You know, it's kind of like a fight for survival, so to speak, but there is, you know, the danger is part of what makes it so interesting.
No, it absolutely is. And then the respect and admiration for each other is why you always see them dap up and give each other love at the beginning and the end of every fight, because they know what is being put on the line. And that's why football teams do the exact same thing. All right, speaking of that defense, Joe, they were swarming. Yeah. They were getting after it. I'm a little excited. I can't lie. I'm excited to see what the first team looks like doing that.
Yeah, how about that Nate Oli attack style front was looking pretty nice with, you know, especially some of these young players, guys like Brandon Dorlas, Zach Harrison, Taquan Graham, Ruka Roro, of course. Like, these are guys we've been kind of wanting to see more out of, obviously wanting to see any of them in the case of, like, Dorlas, for example, who just seemed like seemed to be stuck behind in the rotation last year. Great to see them getting active, causing chaos, just like Nate Oli kind of put it out there, and was able to actually have a really good conversation with him today just about what he was seeing and what he wants these guys to implement. You know, he talks about running into dark rooms. He showed us they all wear wristbands, you know, that's got some plays on there and whatnot. He covered up the top part, but the last thing that's on the wristband is their kind of mantra on that defensive line, which is GTFO. And that is get the you-know-what off the ball, is what that's a reminder of. And I thought you just really saw that energy up front. You know, they were causing havoc. They were getting in the backfield. We saw the strip sacks from Arnold Ebikadi. We saw, you know, other guys knocking the ball loose. That's exactly the kind of thing that you want to see from a young and untested, unproven maybe defensive front with all these guys who are playing. But I think it's exactly, you know, well, maybe not exactly. I mean, Nate Oli said, you know, there's things we need to clean up, of course. And there is more teaching to it than simply just kind of shooting into the backfield. But he just wants to drive that point home with these guys for it to be and the primary thing they're thinking about, and really not to be thinking about much else. You know, there's all these other phrases called, if you think you stink, like we want their brains to be on fire, is what he said today, that kind of thing. And I think that it's showing some really interesting early returns. And by the way, Chris, you might find this interesting, but we got to talking about kind of where this attack style front came from, you know, because he's a relatively new coach, but he picked it up when he was in Indianapolis originally. And this attack style front, what he describes, these guys getting into the backfield, shooting into the backfield, it was actually devised by, I believe, it was a gentleman named Jim Washburn is who he said it originates from, who was a defensive coach for the Tennessee Titans throughout the early 2000s. And this was a way to scheme against the Colts' success and what they were doing with that stretch run and Peyton Manning. The reason why stretch was so effective is because defensive linemen were trying to read the blocks. And basically when you're trying to read a stretch, the running back can basically make you never be right. The running back can ultimately find the lane. And so the way that you beat that is just by basically ignoring the block, getting into the backfield, and causing the rerouting of the defense of the halfback in that case. And I think that it's just showing that those kinds of principles can still be effective in this modern NFL.
Yeah, and that 1 or 1.5 seconds spent making a decision is all the time the running back needs also to put a move on you and make you look stupid. Yep. And that's part of this equation as well. Speaking of making you look stupid, DeMarco Helms made his presence felt. How much more difficult is the safety rotation going to be now to figure out?
Well, I mean, I don't think DeMarco Helms is like necessarily challenging for a starting spot. I think that he has a very clear role for this team. You know, it's one of those things that Raheem Morris talks about so much, which is role clarity. And, you know, DeMarco Helms has a very clear role on this team, which is first and foremost to be on special teams. He's a personal protector. He has a very important role, you know, on teams like punt team. And obviously we can see him able to run and tackle and hit in space, which is, you know, very vitally needed in those special teams roles. So that first and foremost, he does that. But, you know, in the secondary, and what I loved about his game against the Lions is, you know, we saw the big hits, and that brings a certain personality and a certain identity to the defense and to the team. It felt like after he started making those big hits, like, they got everybody going. And when Jeff Ulbrich has talked about what he wants this defense to be, it's never necessarily about scheme. And he's made the point. He's like, you know, every team runs cover three, every team runs cover six. You know, they all run these same coverages. What makes a defense unique is the players that comprise it and what they bring to the table and kind of how they give a personal touch to whatever coverage or blitz or whatever it might be is called on a given play. And I just thought that DeMarco Helms did a great job of just bringing that identity to the team. And that's one of the reasons why he's so important. And I do think that he will be a factor kind of as a like rotational safety to come in. If they need like, you know, a bigger safety in the box at times, if they need to spell somebody, I think that he's a great kind of player to have on the roster. And we saw exactly why.
Talking all things Falcons with our insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out the new podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. For if it's not daily at this point, Joe, it sure seems like it. We're getting new episodes all the time, so make sure you stay on top of Joe Patrick on Football. Listen, I know he was not playing against the starters, but if they move on from Kirk Cousins at some point, and I see more of what I saw on Friday, I'm okay with Easton Stick as the backup. That seems like a perfectly suitable guy to me, Joe.
Yeah, no, he was fantastic. What was he, like 15 for 18? And that was behind, you know, what I thought was a pretty shoddy offensive line. They did kind of get it. Yeah. You know, I thought they got it together a little bit more as the half progressed, but especially early in that game, they just seemed, you know, maybe a little disoriented, a little bit, you know, like, you know, it just, I think seeing a different team, you know, and just a different scheme and different players kind of, you know, had them a little bit disorganized in their pass protection, especially early in that game. And you saw Easton Stick really kind of able to stay calm under pressure in some of those circumstances and keep the drive moving, keep, you know, completing passes, even if they are just kind of little dump offs to Dylan Drummond or whoever. You know, he was able to keep that thing ticking. And, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think there's a reason why the Falcons wanted to sign him is because I think that they saw that he could be a backup quarterback if they were able or wanted to move off of Kirk Cousins. He was a serial winner in college as the quarterback at North Dakota State, which is a smaller program, but a prestigious program in their own right. And then he's had playing time in the NFL with the Chargers last year. So, I think he's a quarterback who's just continuing to gain confidence in his career. And yeah, like, I think that he could very well stick around as the Falcons backup beyond this year, when we know that, you know, Kirk Cousins, regardless of what happens with him this year, we know he won't be around for the following season. So I think that, Easton Stick is a guy that could stick.
Well, well done, sir. A couple more before I let you loose. I know Carlos Washington may be dealing with a little something. Casey Washington, Clark Phillips. There's a couple of guys, Braylon Trice. A couple of guys I didn't see that I was looking forward to seeing. What do you know about those gents?
Well, I think you didn't see him for different reasons. I kind of, that's a little tongue in cheek. I think that, you know, with Casey Washington, I think the reason, like, he's a starter. And I think he did dress. He may have played for the first series. And same with David Sills. David Sills played, I know, the first series. And then they may have sat him after that, which that means good things for those guys. Today, Casey Washington continued to run with the ones with Darnell Mooney. I think he's won that job, basically, at this point in time. I would expect him to be, you know, this team's wide receiver 5 or 4, you know, however you want to categorize it, with Kendarrell Hodge, who's more of a special teams specialist, so to speak. So, I think Casey Washington did. Clark Phillips, I have more questions about. You know, he didn't play. He got banged up and did not participate in that scrimmage that they had, that intra-squad scrimmage on the Wednesday, nor was he able to play in that preseason game on Friday. Didn't see him again out there today, so unknown if he's going to be able to play in joint practices, which really puts him behind the eight ball. And frankly, I just don't see him making the roster at this point in time unless he can get back on the field and make the plays with the reps that he has to kind of change the dynamic at this point in time, because you have other cornerbacks who are stepping up, whether that's Natrone Brooks, Lamar Jackson, the team clearly likes a lot, and then you've got the UDFA Kobe Bryant, who's really kind of rising up the ranks in terms of the reps he's getting in practice since he was activated off NFI. So some tough competition there for Clark Phillips. And with Braylon Trice, you know, it seems like today he said that they wanted to just be cautious with him. I just continue to think that he's going to be a guy who they're not really aiming for him to be a contributor, in week one, coming off an ACL injury. They want to be really careful with him. And you know that you're going to get banged up over the course of the season, and at some point you will need to rely on him. Like, for example, Khalid Kareem came, the Falcons signed him midseason off a practice squad, and he was, you know, he had key reps for the team in the middle of the season. So Braylon Trice could be that guy for the team this year, even though he's just sticking on the roster. So there will be lots of choices the team will have to make in that regard as to who they're going to carry on the 53. There's definitely going to be some tough cuts, but certainly we're going to get more data points this week against the Titans, maybe the best data points possible, especially with regards to maybe not the starting, the 53-man roster, but who's going to be starting when we see the good-on-good happen and some one-on-ones, which will be really fun to watch in these joint practices.
All right, you just mentioned it. What are you looking at the next couple of days to get you ready, because this is essentially it right here in terms of real reps?
Yeah, I can't wait for one-on-ones because we haven't really seen many of them in Falcons practices so far. Raheem Morris is very dead set on as many team reps as possible because he thinks that those are the best, that's the best use of your time, basically, is to be out there as a team for basically almost every position. And so I think for the offensive and defensive linemen, especially like these pass rushers, it's going to be very interesting to see how they get on in one-on-one situations. Same with the receivers and corners. You know, that's always a fun thing. And then, you know, this is the best football, quality of football and competitiveness level that we're going to see, basically, from Michael Penix and Drake London and the guys we expect to be seeing on Sundays throughout the rest of the preseason. These guys are just obviously not going to play in any of these preseason games. So, you know, it sounds very basic, but that's obviously what I'm looking forward to. Love watching good football.
All right, Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll talk to you later in the week. Looking forward to breaking down what we see in these scrimmages. Hopefully a lot more of what we saw on Friday.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Chris.
That is our intrepid Falcons reporter, Joe Patrick. When we get back, we'll close up shops with some of the highlights of preseason week one, not just from our Falcons here in the A, but around the National Football League. including, yes, Oren, we will talk about Shedeur Sanders. I went 3 hours and 37 minutes without mentioning Shedeur Sanders, and I get a round of applause from Oren Romain in the producer studio. I waited as long as I possibly could, but yes, we'll talk about what Shedeur Sanders did and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. Wrapping up shop on a Monday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. It's Turtle with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Oren, I always used to get this song confused. Who did I think it was by for the longest time? Beck?
Really?
Yeah, but it's The Verve, isn't it?
Yeah, fun fact. They didn't have the right to, like, record this song. Yeah, The Stone sued them for copyright infringement or... Yeah, just still in the song, basically.
And they won?
Yeah, so they lost. Oh, boy. They lost all the publishing of the song.
And that was it? This was the only song they ever had, really?
Their one song was Cruel Intentions. It played at the end credits of Cruel Intentions. And, yeah, they didn't make any money off of it because
Well, come
they stole
up with
it.
Your own damn song then, Verve. The Verve.
Yeah, you didn't have permission. No sample didn't clear. You didn't have permission to sample it. And lo and behold, the Stones took you to court and got every cent of that publishing for that song.
Not that they needed it.
Not that they needed it, no.
They were 30 years into an established career already at that
point. But, I mean, it was a huge song.
Yeah,
so
no, it was.
You get a payday. Yeah. And you don't have to work to get it.
It's child support for one of Mick's 15 kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Or one of Keith's habits.
Wifey and I saw them when they were here at Mercedes-Benz in 2021.
Okay.
2021. This is going to sound bad. It was a birthday gift to her. They were floor seats.
Whoa.
But I purchased them because I sold two standing room only tickets to game five of the World Series, the Braves and the Astros. I went to game three.
Okay.
But I got another pair for game five, and I was like, I don't know if I want to, if I can go to this. Let me just see. So,
well, you know what makes sense? That's why you have Franklin.
That's true.
That's why you have Franklin, Oren.
Those tickets each went for $800.
I'm not surprised.
So you know what? I got a windfall here.
Whatever, man.
Let me go ahead and treat my nice wife to a night out. It was a Christmas gift / late birthday gift.
Did you go to eat at one of these bougie restaurants in Midtown?
No, it was crazy bad weather that night. Crazy bad weather. So we just hit the concert and came back home. But my original point, Mick, 80 years old, he talked about how the night before he had gone out to the Claremont Lounge and saw Blondie. And if you're familiar with the Claremont Lounge and Blondie, you know what trick Blondie's able to do. So he saw that. But a hell of a performer in his 80s, man. And Keith is not as sharp as he used to be. He's still on stage and having fun with it. But Mick.
Do they have another guitarist on stage with them?
Yeah, they have another guitarist.
Okay.
I think at this point, they might let Keith do like some solo work, but he's basically sort of rhythm. He's not lead. Just kind of strum.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, listen, yeah, man. Talk about living nine lives. That dude has lived about 15 of them.
Well, they say the Holocaust, if it comes, it'll be cockroaches, Twinkies, and Mick Jack. And Keith Richards, that will survive. That's
yeah.
It.
Let's use World War III. It just sounds a little better.
World War III. There we go.
Yeah. It'll be, yeah, right. Cockroaches, Twinkies. You have a bomb shelter, three things will survive. Cockroaches, Twinkies, and Keith
there
Richards.
There we go.
That's what we'll do. All right. Let's close out with a little bit of sound from this weekend's action NFL preseason. Oren, let's start with the Cleveland Browns stuff. This was Shedeur Sanders on display in the second quarter. Yeah, Shedeur Sanders.
Sanders out of the shotgun, pumps the leg. Two on the play clock, has the ball. Sanders to throw. Pocket collapsing, moving to the right. Eyes downfield, directing traffic. Now throwing a deep ball. Florio, one-handed catch. Luke Florio, hello. 31-yard line of the Panthers and out of bounds, stopping the clock.
It was just an all-around impressive performance from Shadur. He's getting all the hype. He's getting all the ESPN First Take. All the debate shows are talking about it. Should he be QB1? I mean, if he earns it, right? It's pretty silly. He's another player, guys. He's not, you know, he was a very good college quarterback that I think has potential to play in the NFL. I don't think he's his dad. Like, he's not going to go down as a top three player of all time at his position.
The idea is that you want to win ball games. So if Shadur ends up giving Cleveland the best chance to win ball games, then that's the guy they got to play.
Yeah, I mean,
Simple as that.
If he outplays Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco and Dylan Gabriel, good, give him the job. If he doesn't, he'll sit. It's fine. I mean, guys, he's not Arch Manning in terms of prospects. He's just not, and that's why he went in the fifth round. Now, I don't think all of that is fair. I think teams were just like, the talent does not equal the circus, so we're just going to stay away, and that's what ultimately wound up happening, a bit of a Tim Tebow effect, except Shadur is obviously light years ahead of where Tim Tebow was when he came out of college. He was talking about if he moved up on the QB chart. This was his response.
I honestly don't know, and I don't really care, you know. Whenever it's my turn, and I just got to take advantage of it. I feel like, you know, today I did some good, some bad. And I know moving forward, you know, I won't make the same mistakes twice. That's not in my control, and, you know, regardless of whatever the situation, it's not up to me, and it is what it is. I just got to, you know, accept whatever everything come with.
Let me be clear about something, Shadur. Nobody gives a if you say that you care. You don't have to be too cool for school there, Shadur. Yes, you care. It's your livelihood.
Taking
your
the high
job.
Road after the first preseason game.
Yeah, it's your future. Of course you care. Stop it, Shadur. Come on, man.
Of all the times to be modest.
Yeah, you don't need to be. Come on, man. Of course you care. If you don't care, that's a As a matter of fact, if you don't care, that's a problem. What do you mean you don't care? Of course you care. You don't care? Shadur. Let's rein it in here, pal, a little bit. Come on, man. I know Nike's doing the whole you got the watch up with the wrist and everything.
That was a bit much.
It's been one preseason game. It's okay.
That was a bit much. I realized that Nike got exactly what they wanted that, which is a ton of eyes. Look at that spot, but I saw that and I went, you have to be kidding me.
Come on, man.
You gotta be kidding me.
One preseason game where he was like 14 of 23 passing. Like, it's not like if he went, you know, 23 of 23 with four touchdowns, okay, I get the celebration. But my God. He was also talking about he's getting comfortable being uncomfortable.
Well, I say I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. Yeah. That's what it is. You know, I got pockets of finding my rhythm, and I got to get into that quicker, regardless of anything. But overall, I feel like me out there. I couldn't do it, of course, without the time. I couldn't do it without the play calling. I couldn't do it without anything. So I'm just thankful to even be able to have, you know, the joy of just being on the field overall, then carrying the responsibility of doing the right thing. You know, so that's two badges under my belt already.
Now that's a better response. I like that one a lot more than I don't care if I move up the depth chart or not. Yes, you do. Stop it, Shadur. That response, measured. And I'm sure the difference between those two responses will be the difference in his playing career early on. It's going to be uneven. It's going to be, guys, he's not Peyton Manning, or he's not Arch Manning. He's not Andrew Luck or even Trevor Lawrence coming out of college. Like, he's not one of those guys. He was a good to very good college quarterback who played behind a terrible offensive line and has good prospects in the NFL. He's not Joe Montana. And if you expect him to be that, unfortunately, I think you are sorely mistaken. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight Turtle. I'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 6 to 10 right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll react to how the scrimmages go tomorrow. Josh Kendall of The Athletic covering the Falcons is going to stop by to give us a boots-on-the-ground report. We'll also continue to talk college ball, and we'll continue to discuss everything else going on in the A. Appreciate everybody who jumped on the show tonight and jumped on the post at C. Thomas Radio talking about if the Falcons will win 10 games this season. You know where I stand. I certainly do. What say you? Again, if you haven't